Conference record has joined the conference.
All right, Brian, you still there?
I'm here.
All right. Sorry about that.
No problem.
So, like I said, my name is John Shum with The Grateful Web. Joining me today is pianist and founder of Jacob Fred Jazz Odyssey. Brian, is it Haas?
It's Haas, yeah.
Haas, okay. Great. Well, thanks for joining me today, Brian. I know we kind of just chatted a little bit about how you were in Denver, but what else are you up to? What's going on these days?
Well, it's a Jacob Fred 20-year anniversary, and so we've just been super busy this year. We just had some great shows in New York and Chicago and St. Louis, and then we all trade time between Santa Fe and Tulsa, and we just wrote 9 new songs and just recorded them in Denver with Colin Bricker. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, like I just got back from that. We were going to do put out two records this year of all old Fred. And we've got the Millions Live in Denver thing coming up for Record Store Day, and we're just writing so much new material, we decided to make the second one all brand new tunes. So, yeah, we just recorded that, and it's super unique stuff. And, yeah, just kind of recovering from the drive. We just drove, I just got in this morning at like 3 a.m. from Santa Fe, so.
Woo.
So the
all
other
right,
two
moving.
Members, the other two guys in Jacob Fred live in Tulsa full-time, and I live in Santa Fe full-time, so we just go back and forth a lot.
And you're from Tulsa originally? Is that correct?
Uh-huh. Yeah, born in Kansas City, Missouri, really from KCMO, but I've lived in Tulsa for most of my life.
Cool. And you were saying so how you were recording some new material. Does everybody kind of bring ideas to the table when it comes to new material, or is it, you know, writing most of the
stuff?
Yeah.
It's very collaborative. But like with this new thing, I brought in half of the stuff, and Chris Combs brought in half of the stuff, and then Raymer comes up with just like some of the weirdest drum stuff ever. This new thing that we recorded, man, I can't wait for people to hear it. It's super unique, super innovative, but I don't know, really down to earth and really accessible at the same time. I don't know if I've ever really heard music like this before, so I'm super excited about the stuff we just recorded.
Nice. Can we expect to hear some of these new compositions on the upcoming tour?
Oh, yeah. We'll be playing all of them.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, we'll be playing every last of them. I mean, that's sort of how, that's the interesting way that this new trio composes is we just come up with it all live together in the rehearsal space. And so it's, I don't know, you know, before we ever took this stuff into the studio, we played half of the tunes live in Chicago and St. Louis, and then pushed the other one super hard in the rehearsal space. So we showed up at the studio just already playing the stuff pretty well.
Nice. Jumping over to Millions, the live Denver release that you guys recorded at Dazzle Jazz, I believe it was this past November. Were there any of the new material? Did you play any of the new material for that show, or was that all kind of retrospective stuff?
That was all retrospective in Denver, but we spent a ton of time rearranging it all. I mean, that was actually surprisingly hard work, because a lot of those songs were played as a 6-piece or 7-piece or even 8-piece. So then for the three of us to distill it down, I think it was actually way harder work than any of the three of us suspected it would be. So yeah, all that stuff at Dazzle, we showed up at Dazzle with like 25 reworked Jacob Fred tunes, and that's what became that record. We just chose the stuff that seemed to translate the best.
Nice. Yeah, I was going to say how you dug through the material and kind of decided, you know, which to do. I'm sure you had, you know, a lot. You guys have so much stuff to choose from, you know, it's hard to narrow it down, I'm sure. And then especially
it was kind of humbling. I didn't realize how difficult a lot of that old stuff was until I started trying to relearn it. I couldn't even, some of it, we like never really figured out what the chords were. We just had to come up with new chords. we did not.
Not really like riding a bike, huh?
No, it really wasn't. It was because I was coming off a Frames tour. I made a record with Matt Chamberlain last year, and then I toured that with different drummers for 3 months straight, and then left the LA show, drove right to Santa Fe where Combs and Raymer were waiting on me, and we dug right into it, and we'd all been transcribing for months and talking about it and playing it. We'd played a lot of those things over the summer, and we thought that we were just going to roll into Santa Fe, and it was going to be a piece of cake, and turned into these 10 to 12-hour days of just really, really hard work before we even showed up at Dazzle.
Wow. Well, it sounds great. I was able to give it a listen last night, and, you know, I enjoyed it pretty much as I did in person at the show.
Awesome.
So that's
well, that's
great.
Good news.
Yeah, sounds awesome. And then, so you guys are releasing that on Record Store Day as a final
yeah,
release,
yeah, that comes
right?
out vinyl only on Record Store Day, April 19th, and then this thing that we just recorded will come out in September of this year. So,
wow.
Yeah, lots, we're putting out two records this year. But the second thing that we just recorded, we'll put that out beginning of September, and we'll put it out on CD and vinyl and digital as well.
Cool. Very cool. Kind of jumping in, like you mentioned earlier, reworking the songs because most of them, you know, had a bass player, had other musicians on them. I remember when I was at the show, someone was kind of saying, you know, where's the bass? It sounds like there's a bass up there. You know, but there wasn't. And I guess he came to realize that it's the trio now. So after having a bass player for a majority of, you know, your time as a band, what led to the departure of the instrument, I guess I would say?
Well, really, it started in, like, 2002 when our original bassist decided he wanted to stop playing bass lines and wanted to be more of a lead instrument. So if you go back and listen to a lot of the stuff with myself and Reed and Jason Smart, I'm actually playing bass on Cinder Rhodes for a lot of that trio stuff, and the lead voice is actually Reed. And that started in, actually, if you want to go back, that started in 2001, live in New York City, the last thing that Knitting Factory Records put out. It was called All Is One, live in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the reviews for that, people were saying, how does he make a Fender Rhodes sound like that? Like, is the instrumentation wrong? Why is he playing such weird synths and all this stuff? And it was actually redoing all of that, and I was playing bass on Fender Rhodes. So
wow.
I've been playing bass with the band, and in fact, half of the songs on All Is One Live in New York City, Reed is leading on bass using a whammy pedal and distortion pedals.
Oh, cool.
So I've been playing bass with Jacob Fred since 2000. We actually made an unreleased record. An investor came in and thought he was going to get us a Blue Note deal. And in 2000, we made a record called Ballad of the Mole People.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm playing bass on Fender Rhodes almost that entire record. And it's Reed playing lead on bass guitar.
Wow.
So, in answer to your question, I've really been playing bass on and off with the band since 2000. The first time you can hear it documented in a recording would be All Is One Live in New York City, which came out on Knitting Factory Records.
Okay.
So, yeah, the first documented recorded version of me playing at least half of the bass on a record was the record we put out in 2001. So, yeah, I've considered myself one of the main bassists in the band for a long time. Now, when we switched over to the quartet with upright bass in 2008, then because we had upright, I decided I wanted to take a little break from playing so much low end and playing so much bass. And that's when we made the transition from Reed on electric bass to a variety of different upright bassists. And so then when it was upright on stage, I diminished my bass role, but that was only for, you know, basically 2009 to 2000, you know, through the Race Riot suite, I really slowed down on my bass playing because we started writing all this stuff that required a bassist. But up until 2009, I mean, I shared the bass responsibilities with Reed, for sure. I mean, a lot of gigs, I would play way more bass on the Fender Rhodes than he would.
Wow.
And it's really interesting. You go back and listen to that recorded stuff. I'm super into playing bass, and so I don't make it obvious that I'm doing it. So a lot of times, it doesn't sound like Fender Rhodes bass. It sounds like somebody's actually playing a bass, but it's not. It's just me.
And yeah, then it cracks me up. I remember looking on stage and looking for a bass player and hearing this guy say, "Where's the bass player? Is he hiding off like on the side somewhere?"
No, I mean, I've been playing bass for a lot of the band's history, for sure. Because Reed was such a lead instrumentalist, and so he always felt kind of frustrated that he was relegated into the background as a bassist, and so we wrote tons of material where I was doing all or most of the bass. But then what was so interesting is a lot of the reviews, people wouldn't really get it. Even when people were at the live show, we would get these funny reviews and funny comments where people are saying, like, it's the ugliest Fender Rhodes sound on earth, and how the hell are they doing this, and why are they doing this? Well, it wasn't the Fender Rhodes. It was actually Reed's bass run through a whammy pedal or an octave pedal. But it's like people are just so used to like seeing a bassist and assuming that those noises are coming from the bass. It's funny how gullible humans are.
Actually. I know.
We just kind of go with what we know or what we're used to, right? So, I mean, even like that review, that, man, tons of records from 2002 all the way through 2008. People would, you know, I mean, we got a lot of great reviews. I mean, critics have been very sweet to us, but it was interesting. It became frustrating to read, because nobody could figure out that was him doing that. It's like people could not break with the paradigm shift and like notice that the dude freaking out playing those lead lines wasn't me. It was the guy on bass. And so it became very frustrating to read because all the badass shit he was doing was always being attributed to me. And so multiple times I would write letters to Downbeat or Jazz Times and say, you guys need to use your ears and you need to use your eyes and actually look at who is doing this on stage, you know, because they say, well, on this tune, the melody came soaring out of nowhere and hurt my ears or whatever. It was too high-pitched or it was this or it was that. And they would, you know, I was either getting blamed for them not liking it or I was getting his accolades. So it was really interesting. Nobody could figure out that was the pianist playing bass. So that's a long answer to your question. I've really been playing bass in the band for, you know, for a long time.
And now, of course, with the trio, you're holding that down as well, I'm assuming, for, you know, the shows. And you've got Combs. He's rap steel and guitars, right? And then Raymer on drums.
But Combs and I both got a Moog sponsorship. Like, Moog, for some reason, loves us. And Combs and I each got a Moog sponsorship. And so there are quite a few tunes when you see us. Are you going to be at the Boulder show on the 19th?
I am supposed to be, but I might be out on tour. I work for a couple bands myself, so
okay.
I'm hoping to
very
be
cool.
there. But
well, Combs has actually got a Moog as well. I play most of the bass with Jacob Fred now, but there's also some really dope new tunes where Combs is actually playing bass. And he's actually, like, making loops and stuff on his lap steel, and he's got a tiny keyboard run through the Moog Minotaur, and there's some really cool songs where some songs that I wrote and some songs that he wrote where Combs is playing bass too, which is just going to further confuse everybody.
Hey, you got to keep people on their toes.
Exactly. But, I'm super glad you dig the Millions live in Denver stuff, but it's going to blow your mind when you hear the evolution between that stuff and these nine new songs that we just wrote and recorded. I mean, it's crazy. It's the most I've ever listened to a record after I recorded it. I mean, in between Denver and Santa Fe, I bet we listened to it, because first we had to get from Denver to Santa Fe to go pick up one of my dogs. I bet we listened to it like 20 times in between Denver and Santa Fe. And then between Santa Fe and Tulsa, that's all we listened to. We kept trying to put on other shit, and we just kept going like, man, I just want to hear that Jacob Fred shit. And it's the most I've ever liked record. Hopefully I like it this much in 2 months, man, but it's definitely the most I've ever liked a Fred record. I mean, we just keep listening to it. It just, like, I don't know, it kind of took on a life of its own. I was just going to say, it kind of surprised Calibro, too, because he was all fired up for another retrospective, and then, like, a month or so ago, we were like, hey, we've got these nine really new, weird tunes. Are you cool if we don't do more old stuff? And Calibro thought about it for a while. He was like, man, if you guys are passionate about it, do what you're passionate about.
Absolutely.
So it's a total evolution of the band. It's really cool. I know, it's very weird. It's weird, unique stuff.
That's great. I mean, I love it. How long have the two guys, Combs and Raymer, been in the band with you?
Raymer joined in 2007, and mm-hmm. Combs joined in early 2008. So they're the other two guys that have been in the band the longest other than me. Raymer's been in for 7 years, and Combs have been in for 6 years.
Starting to show that you guys really know each other on stage and through the music and everything.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time together, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's locked in, man. It sounds great.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah. So your music is kind of in a league of its own, I would say. And on the upcoming tour, you're doing a co-tour with Mike Dillon Band, who I would also say whose music is kind of his own and no one else is really, you know, kind of touching what he's doing. How did you first get to know Mike Dillon, and what's kind of the history you guys have between each other?
I first saw him play when I was 17 years old, before I even started Jacob Fred. When I was a classical musician, and I thought that I wanted to be a classical musician for a living, my favorite shows to go to were punk rock shows in Tulsa. And Tulsa's always had a huge music scene, especially punk rock scene. And these people kept going, hey, man, there's this weird band that comes through every 2 to 3 months. You have to see these guys. You're going to love these guys. And the band they were talking about was Billy Goat, which was Mike D's first big band that blew up.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see Billy Goat live?
I have not. No, I never did.
It was like a pagan explosion of insanity. So a lot of them were jazz guys from North Texas who just like got really into drugs and started doing super unique shit. So I walked into this dirty club in Tulsa called The Eclipse. I was 17 years old. It was my senior year in high school. And most of the band was naked. And Mike D was buck ass naked at the front of the stage, rapping with this lisp. And he was butt naked, and he was playing timbales, and then took this unbelievably eloquent timbale solo, just buck-ass naked in front of this packed club. And that was the first time I ever saw Mike D, and I was terrified of this dude. I mean, if you think he's scary now, you should have seen what this dude was like when he was shooting up hard drugs. I mean, he was terrifying. He was like the epitome. He was the epitome of like the punk rock raconteur. I mean, I've never ever seen anything like it. He still is. He still is. He's still my hero even to this day. But I mean, seeing that and seeing jazz in that context and seeing like that they had a song called "Take Off Your Clothes, Everybody Get Naked" or some shit, and like being at this club as a 17-year-old and all these girls are taking off their shirts and they're like playing, and this band is playing this angry jazz shit. I mean, as a 17-year-old, I walked in there and I stood there, and people were moshing and shit, and I realized that what I was doing was completely irrelevant. That I would never be able to get people excited like this if I was only going to be playing classical music, if I was only playing other people's shit. And so Mike D was an inspiration originally for me to even start Jacob Fred, for me to even think I could do something so far out. And I did not miss any of his shows in the Tulsa area after that, but I never went and talked to him. I was completely terrified of this guy. You know, I mean, he had his wife on stage. She was getting naked too. The half the band was naked. They all had big dicks. I mean, it was just terrifying to me, you know, and it's like, they're not getting arrested. They just do this at every show.
Wow.
And,
that's wild.
And I mean, Billy Goat got signed to Universal and sold a shitload of units in a month and then got dropped because they figured out that he was like on drugs or because of something. But they moved a ton of units in a very short amount of time, and they did get a major label deal in the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, they were like, and they were from Texas, and, you know, I'm from Kansas City and Tulsa, so Billy Goat was a huge deal in this region. So then, you know, I started Jacob Fred when I was 19, And we took off really quickly, for better or worse. I mean, immediately, Jake and Fred, after we started, we were playing for 300 to 500 people every night in the region. And eventually, we ended up in Lawrence, Kansas one night. I think it was 96. I would have been 21. And we ended up in Lawrence, and we played an early show in Lawrence, and I heard through the grapevine that Mike D was playing a gig in Kansas City with the Malachi Papers. So we busted ass, packed up, drove to Kansas City, went to Davies Uptown, this dirty little dive bar, and Malachi Papers was always Mike D's kind of free jazz experimental band. I was 21 years old. It was 96. I rolled in. We all rolled in at the end of the set, and they were killing it. And then Mike D, who was playing vibes and percussion, got into this huge fight with the drummer on stage, and they actually started throwing cymbals and shit at each other. And everybody in my band was terrified. Everybody in my band was like, we drove from Lawrence to see this mayhem? And I was just like right up front, just in disbelief. I mean, they were like throwing cymbals down on the ground, yelling and screaming at each other. And I just kind of stood up there, and Mike D, when he came down off of the stage, I was one of the only people left standing there, and he was like, what's up, man? And I said, hey, Mike Dillon, hey, man, it's Brian Hawk. I play with this band called Jacob Fred Jazz Odyssey. We're all here. We all drove here to see you. And he's like, oh, yeah, man, I've been seeing your posters around. You guys really play jazz? You guys just more fucking posers. And I was just kind of, and I think I said, both? And he was like, oh, I like that. And then he was like, you know, here's Mark Sutherland. And he introduced me to the guys in the band and stuff. And that was in 1996. And that was the first time I ever met him. And he just kind of liked the, you know, I think he just kind of liked my Midwestern attitude, that I didn't have an attitude or any kind of ego. He sort of, you know, because we toured all the same clubs. So we'd seen our posters everywhere, because I've always been really into street team and promo and just promoting on the ground level. So Mike had been seeing our posters for a couple of years and said that he felt kind of competitive, that we had the name Jazz in the band and that we were drawing well when we were in his region. So his first question was something like, are you guys playing jazz? Are you just more posers? And, you know, my only answer, I was totally terrified of this guy. My only answer was both, and he was, you know, slightly charmed by that, and we've been friends ever since. And, I mean, now we're way beyond friends. We're, like, fucking, you know, we're brothers. So right. Mike is really one of my very first heroes that I can say I really had as an adult, where I realized, like, man, this guy is getting in this dirty van. He's doing 300 shows a year. He's, you know, beyond terrifying, but he's making this music that nobody else has ever made. I mean, Mike D has always been an innovator. I love his current band, obviously. It's fucking brilliant. Mm-hmm. But he's always been on this trip. A lot of people don't realize that. Like, Mike has never, ever sat still. I mean, from Billy Goat on, he's churning, burning. He's very much in the tradition of Coltrane or Mingus or Eric Dolphy. Or Coltrane, I already said Train, Mingus, Dolphy, Miles, you know, I'm just trying to think of people that just always pushed. People like Yusef Lateef, people like Cecil Taylor, who else can I think
of? He's just always moving, it is, it's crazy.
Yeah, he never stops. I mean, like, you know, we started the Dead Kennedys together, which was myself and Mike D and Skerrick, you know, and
right.
Mike 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night. Skerrick and I would always room together and give Mike his own room, because Mike wakes up at 7 a.m. every day and goes on a jog and then practices tabla for 2 hours.
Wow.
So, I mean, he just never fucking stops. And he's part of that jazz tradition of just constant innovation, constant churning, constant burning. A lot of people don't understand that what Mike is playing is actually jazz. It's more in the jazz tradition than all this horseshit Young Lion bullshit that Jazz Times and Downbeat espouses. That shit is not jazz. That shit's like a fucking history piece. It's like classical music gone wrong, you know. But what Mike D does is not a history piece. It's actually taking history and he's squashing it and molding it and turning it into his own innovation. And, you know, it's like, I can't believe Mike D has not been on the cover of Downbeat and Jazz Times like 10 times already. So people are terrified of him and don't want to admit that what he's doing is actually jazz. And but what they're trying to sell in these magazines is just like history regurgitated poorly.
Right.
So Mike has always been a hero of mine ever since I was 17 years old. Ever since the first time I saw him, I was just like, this is Coltrane. This is real. This dude is not posturing. He is dying for this shit every day. And that's, mm-hmm. I mean, that's been my philosophy behind Jacob Fred ever since I started the band when I was 19. I mean, in 20 years, we've had 16 members. 16 members in 20 years. Millions Live in Denver will be our 22nd album in 20 years.
Oof.
You know, I'm very much a Mike D disciple, you know. So for me to be able to go on the road with him for a whole run is just, I mean, it's beyond perfect, you know. It's just absolutely like a dream come true.
So can you mentioned the Dead Kenny G's. Can we expect you guys to get on stage together throughout the tour and, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're planning on trying to set up everything every night and then ending every night with just with all of us playing together. That's the basic idea. It's all about, you know, the space and the stage and what time allows. But you know, we've all already played with each other a lot. So the idea is to obviously keep pushing that.
Yeah, well, hell, man. I mean, the two bands, you know, together, it's kind of mind-blowing, honestly. And to see it in a, you know, a venue like Shine, which you said you'd been there, it's, you know, it's an interesting joint. You know,
I love the mission statement there. It's one of the main reasons I want to play there. And it's a Wednesday. I was too scared to do the Fox on a Wednesday, I got to tell you. It's a little big. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of the Three Sisters, and, you know, and the food there, just their mission statement is clean, organic, local, and I just think if more people ate like that, we wouldn't need health insurance, we wouldn't need doctors, and, you know, so I'm just super into Jill and what she's doing there, for sure.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's
a great
point. It's a tiny room and a tiny stage. I mean, Jesus Christ, man. Just Mike D's gear alone is going to take up that whole stage.
I know. You guys are going to be spilling off the damn thing.
I know. We're just going to have to set up on the floor. I went back there and looked again when we were there two nights ago. And yeah, it's definitely just his, like, vibes and timbales and all his shit is going to literally take up that whole stage.
Yeah, and they bounced around, too. They're like, you know, Carly, the trombone or whatever she plays, she's bouncing around everywhere. So I can't imagine she's even going to be on the stage, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's going to be rowdy. It's going to be rowdy, for sure.
Well, that's good. That'll be fun, man. I know,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it, and I really hope I am, you know, here for it.
What other bands do you work with?
I sell merchandise for J. Gray and Mofro.
Hell yeah, man. I love
Jay Gray. Yeah, he's great. We're actually about to go out on a run. It's called the Southern Soul Assembly. It's him and Luther Dickinson from the North Mississippi All-Stars and Anders Osborne and
hell yeah,
guy that left in my mind. So that should be a fun
Anders,
little one that we're
Anders
doing.
Anders is also on the same label that we're on.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
he's great. I'm looking forward to it.
He's one of Calibro's boys. I'm pretty sure Anders is still on, I think he's still on Royal Potato, Marco's label. I don't know. Maybe he's not, but I'm pretty sure he is. Maybe I'm thinking about Grace and Caps. Maybe Marco just plays with Anders a lot.
That might be it, yeah. So that should be fun. But I think the show's on the 19th. I think that's like 3 days after I'm gone or something, or our second show. So I was still trying to figure out if I could do it or not, but I'm going to have to probably pass on it, you know. I won't be in the area. I'll be in, like, Chicago or some cool place.
Dang it. Yeah. I would love for you to be able to hear it live. Well, definitely tell your Boulder friends.
I will. We've got a really good friend of mine is covering the show. He'll be handling the review. He usually does a knockout job, so that should be great.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of wraps up what I have for you. I mean, is there anything else that you kind of want to mention or bring up while I have you?
Man, I think you did a great job of bringing up a lot of relevant stuff. It should, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of, I appreciate your intelligent questions for sure.
Well, no problem. I appreciate getting on your website and seeing a portion of my review in the About section. Love it. That's great to
see.
Yeah,
what, did Calibro gank some of your stuff for the,
Yeah, he said he was going to use it for the Millions, the Live in Denver, as like liner notes or something. And,
that whole thing ended up in the middle of the, artwork, for sure.
Oh, hell yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it looks really dope. I think Calibro just put the whole dang thing in there from top to bottom, actually.
Oh, great. Yeah, he sent it over to me and asked if I wanted to revise it or anything and, edited a few things and sent it back over. So that's cool, man. I'm happy to see it.
Awesome.
Glad y'all enjoyed
it. It's printed off in full, like, in the middle of the artwork inside the vinyl. So, yeah, it actually looks pretty dope.
Fuck yeah. Dang it. That's great. Well, I appreciate
that.
Yeah, man.
Thank you for giving a shit, and thanks for that great review. I totally remember that now.
Oh, no worries, man, yeah. I'm actually about to get on the phone with Mike. You want me to pass on anything to him? Anything to say?
Just tell him I'm really looking forward to it, and that we've been working our asses off. I'm promoting it. The tour is going to be fucking banging. Tell him I said hi, and I'm looking forward to it.
Will do. Well, Brian, thank you so much.
You'll have to tell him, yeah, just, give him some hints as to what I just said about him. But he's already
I will. Oh, I definitely will.
He's already got a really big head, so don't blow him up too much.
That'll be great.
And the reason he's got a big head is because he's literally one of the best on earth and he fucking knows it. So he's got every right to have a big head. I mean, I still consider him one of my heroes. He's one of my only original heroes who actually stuck to his guns, and that's what I love about him so much. It's like he and I really have the same mission statement, and that is don't stop believing.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, man. It's a hell of a lineup between the two of the bands, not conforming to anything that anyone wants y'all to do. It's great to see you these days, and I'm hoping you guys get a great turnout there at Shine.
Yeah, man, I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be great. Well, man, thanks for the time, and tell Mike I said hi and that I love him, and I still have a huge bag of his clothing because every time he comes to my Santa Fe house, he just leaves shit all over the house. It's like a wild animal came into my house, and then the wild animal just leaves shit everywhere. So I still got.
Oh my god!
I still have his touring duffel bag with all of his clothes.
He's just waiting for you to get it to him in Boulder, I guess.
I know. Well, cool, man. Thanks for the great interview. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, and I will. I'll catch you down the line. I'm sure.
Awesome.
All right. Good luck on the tour, and have a good one.
Cheers, man. Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
No problem. Take care.
Bye bye.